You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Hi, everybody. I'm your host, Carrie Diamond, and you're listening to Radio Cherry Bomb. Each week, we talk to the most interesting women in the world of food and bring the pages of Cherry Bomb magazine to life. Thank you to our sponsor, Emmy, the maker of delicious traditional cheeses from Switzerland, for supporting this season of our podcast. If you love beautiful Swiss cheeses, look for Emmy's premier Kalt Bock label. Cheeses such as Emmentaler, Gruyere, and Le Cremeux, aged in the 22-million-year-old Kalt Bock cave for superior flavor unlike anywhere else in the world. Hey, everybody, how are you? Today, we pre-recorded the show because I am at the Charleston Wine and Food Festival. Today, tomorrow, Saturday, I'm hosting an event on Saturday with our friend Ellen Bennett from Headley & Bennett, and doing a lot of other fun stuff while I'm there, including some shows for Heritage Radio. If you happen to be at the Charleston Wine and Food Festival, make sure you come and find me and say hi. I always love to meet listeners in person. It also happens to be one of my favorite food festivals, so I'm very excited to be there. What else? A little housekeeping. We are co-sponsoring, ready, a finance seminar with our friends at Davis Wright Tremaine. It's taking place on March 8th. It's part of their Restaurant High AP program, the Fresh Perspectives Professional Series. And ready, the title's a little wonky, but stick with me. It's Successful Financing Strategies for Growth-Minded Restaurant Concepts. So if you are an entrepreneur in the food world, and maybe you have a restaurant or a bakery or a bar, or you would like to have one, or you want to expand what you already have, you can attend the free webinar just because you listen to Radio Cherry Bomb. We're going to put the link on our Facebook page. So just go to our Facebook page when you hear this and click, and all the details are there. And it's free to all of you who are listeners. And it's really, I think it's going to be really fantastic. I mean, I really need to improve my financial literacy as just a human and a business owner. And, you know, when you think about the whole, just everything that happened last year, the Me Too movement, the whole 86 This project that we did on our website, which if you haven't seen it, you should take a look. You know, so much of what's going on comes down to power and who has power. And unfortunately, in this country, power comes down to money. And the more women we can have raising money from investors and opening their own places, the better it will be for all of us. So if you need a little help on the financing side and want to know more about raising money, investors, all of that, be sure to go to our Facebook page, check out the link, and this program is taking place March 8th. Thank you again to the team at Davis Wright Tremaine Attorneys at Law for putting this together and working with Cherry Bomb on this important project. All right, so that's housekeeping matter one. Housekeeping matter two, very exciting. Jubilee tickets will be on sale Friday, March 2nd. Jubilee this year is going to be just really great. We've got a new location. We've got a lot of new things planned for you. Jubilee is taking place Saturday, April 14th. That's the big conference day. Then we have some exciting stuff planned for the next day. So stay tuned. Make sure you're signed up for our email, because people signed up for our email will get first notice of everything. Okay, so sign up for the email. Tickets are on sale Friday, March 2nd, and we would love to see you. Jubilee in New York is really a magical day. Now it's time for today's first guest, Maggie Hoffman, the cocktail authority and author of The One Bottle Cocktail, more than 80 recipes with fresh ingredients and a single spirit, which is out March 6th. Mark your calendars. Maggie was the founder of the drink section of Serious Eats. She is a mom, she is a San Franciscan, and she is not a bartender. Maggie Hoffman, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thanks so much for having me.
We're really excited. This is your first time on Radio Cherry Bomb, and I don't think we've ever met before.
No.
So I'm super happy to be meeting you. And congratulations on your beautiful book. I've got it here right in front of me. And I wish I had this book last summer when I was in Kennebunkport, Maine, and I couldn't find booze anywhere. Well, I mean, I could find beer and wine, but I could not find mixers and all of these things. And I was trying to do this recipe and I needed Saint-Germain and bitters and all these things. And it was making me crazy because I think all we had back at the ranch was gin and vodka. And I was like, I want something more exciting than like a screwdriver or a cranberry and vodka. But nobody in Maine was selling any of that fancy stuff that I needed. So I'm sure a lot of people are super psyched about this book.
That was exactly what I was picturing, was that often you're on vacation and you want to drink something, you know, sort of celebratory, and you might even have great strawberries or great blueberries or herbs, and you can probably find some tequila or some gin, but you're not that likely to find vermouth and Amaro and all the things that bartenders today work with a vast range of ingredients and get really excited about a new product.
Well, I think that's why they call themselves mixologists, because they really are these sort of magic crafters of cocktail, working with all these different ingredients and making things, you know, they're like chefs today. You want people to come to your restaurant to eat things that you won't make at home.
Precisely. And I think there's never been a time where what's happening in bars has been further from what you can and want to do at home.
That's a good way to put it. So when we were our pre-show banter, you had said that you made it very clear you are not a bartender. Did you never work as a bartender?
Mm-mm.
Really?
Mm. I've always loved cocktails. And, you know, when I arrived in New York was that moment where Milk and Honey had just opened and lots of exciting things were happening. We were going to Angel's Share. And
for people who don't know, talk about why those places are important.
Those were sort of the early days of the cocktail revival in New York City, and modeled on Japanese bars, really sexy spaces where you could have really fantastic cocktails and really fantastic classic cocktails in an environment that was peaceful. No one was going to bug you. There were rules. And that's sort of when people don't approach a lady who's drinking by herself. And Sasha Petrasky of Milk and Honey had a series of rules that were meant to help everyone have a good time. And that was really a turning point after the sort of heyday of Cosmopolitans, which really, you know, brought people of my age group to New York City. After that moment, the return of classic cocktails in New York was a really exciting time. And I was actually working in publishing at the time, right after college, and was reading a lot of food blogs and loved to cook and started a little food blog. And those were the days when food bloggers all knew each other because, you know, there just weren't that many of us. And I got in touch with Serious Eats because at the time they didn't have anyone writing about beer. And they took a chance on me. I said, I think you need someone to write about beer, and I'm from Portland. And that was my only qualification. But I set about to
That's a lengthy resume there.
Right. And so I started tasting beer and writing about it, and I loved it. And soon I was writing about other things for them, too. And we decided to start this whole section of drinks. And there were some fabulous drinks writers who were already writing for the site, including Paul Clark, who's at Imbibe now. And so I was learning as I was reading and bringing in more great writers. And I was making all the cocktails for us to photograph, and just got really into getting to talk to bartenders. Bartenders are cool people and really generous, and it's just a wonderful community. And so I started writing about those people, and pretty soon I was a cocktail writer.
What were your work hours?
Well, in those days when I didn't have a child, I could go out more and you know, explore all those bars and things. And in those days, we were running the website sort of by the seat of our pants.
A little cowboy style.
Mm-hmm.
Wild and West.
We were all much younger then. And so we started this drink section, and it was really popular. And, you know, I'd written about wine and beer for so long, but the cocktail stuff was the stuff people really latched on to. And we I really began to see that I wanted people to feel comfortable and I wanted people to not be intimidated. And so that sort of became my specialty, that what I do is write about drinks in a way that's not intimidating, whether it's wine or cocktails or whatever. And the book came about many years later. I moved to San Francisco, had a child, and ended up being introduced to Emily Timberlake, who I don't know
if you couldn't
met.
Drink for 9 months. How was that?
That was actually the least of it. I had gestational diabetes, so I also couldn't drink like cool mocktails or any of those things. It was rough. Though an opportunity to connect to other women. I wrote a thing about gestational diabetes, and that is still the article that people email me about the most, is as a food lover, how do you cope with being told, like, no, you can't eat ice cream when you're pregnant?
Oh, so tell us, how did you cope?
Well, I would treat myself to things that I was allowed to eat. You know, I was eating a lot of cheeses. Some people can tolerate that and some can't, but I could. So I'd get like a really nice hunk of cheese or like a nice steak.
Oh, you just reminded me. I have some Emmentaler for you from our sponsor that I have to put out, which I'm slightly obsessed with. I love cheese, but okay. So you could treat yourself to cheese.
Right. And you know, it was basically a low carb diet for the last 6 months of my pregnancy, and it was fine, and I have a beautiful child, and we all survived. And people write me and say, how did you survive? And I send a picture of my kid and say it all works out in the end. And I think people were looking for that support.
How old is your child now?
2.5, going on 16.
So you're drinking more than ever?
Well, you know, we kind of rediscovered cocktail hour. I've always written about drinks as my job, but once you have a kid and then she goes to sleep, there's this magical moment where we would make a drink and look at each other and be like, it's quiet and there's only adults here, and that's really wonderful. And I do, I tell people, I think it actually helped to have a very young child at home while writing this book, because I was really lucky. I had the help of a nanny who was in our house taking care of her during the day, and sometimes they would go out to the playground and then I would have 1 hour to get things accomplished. And I think a lot of women with young children find this, that you get your act together. You cannot procrastinate. If you have 1 hour of childcare, you write that book in that hour a day. She's in preschool now. Things are much easier.
Time management. So many people ask, I've done a few books over the years, like I used to ghostwrite beauty books, and we just had the Cherry Bomb cookbook, and people are always like, I want to write a book. What's your best advice? I'm like, just get your ass in the chair and write it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the hardest part.
Right. So for me, the challenge was being in the kitchen, because I could hide in my office, but to write this book, I tested about 250 drink recipes, and these were the ones that I just really loved. That was a lot of mixing and a lot of shaking, and I would try to do one a day and find a winner every day.
Wow. We had a few cocktail recipes in the book, and testing it was the hard part for me, because if it doesn't taste right, you have to taste it again, and you have to adjust and taste again, and you know, you don't want it. It's like the middle of the day, and you're like, okay, I'm curious how, I mean, professional bartenders and mixologists, I mean, that's what they do, so I'm sure they've got it figured out, but for me, that was definitely a little tricky. And we only had like 6, you have 80.
Yeah, I had really great bartenders contributing to this, and was able to sort of bring in their advice, and they all got really creative, and it was fun to see sort of bartenders who aren't in all the books, bartenders who aren't like the famous dudes of mixology, to bring in some women, to bring in some people from around the country. And they're really creative folks, especially, you know, in control states where the state controls the distribution of liquor, it can be hard to find specialized ingredients. It can be hard to get a bottle of chartreuse, and you need that to make classic cocktails. But this book, the idea is that they're none of those things. So there's a single spirit, and everything else is from the grocery store or the pantry. And so a little bit of DIY goes a long way. And bartenders were able to make a balanced and modern drink that wasn't just like spiked lemonade, by using savory ingredients like celery and cilantro, by using tea, which has a textural element as well. And if you brew tea for a long time, you can get a little bitterness, which is really great in a cocktail. So balance sweet, sour, strong, with bitter. And there's a lot of vegetables. There's a drink with radicchio. So it was really creative bartenders really stepping up.
Yeah, going through the book, I noticed that, pretty much everything you can get in a grocery store, aside from the liquor and some... I think some states you can buy liquor in grocery stores, mm-hmm. right? New York City, we can't. But everything in here you can pretty much find in a grocery store, which is fantastic. I would imagine it was a fun creative exercise, like you said, for the bartenders, because the ingredients really had to shine.
Mm-hmm. Some of them would text me or send me Facebook messages from the grocery store, and they'd say, I'm in the aisle of Whole Foods or whatever, and what do you think about marmalade, or what do you think about almond milk, or sesame oil, or whatever, and that was fun to sort of watch them live, and they use cool stuff. You know, you can buy a lot of great ingredients nowadays. Like, you can buy carrot juice. You don't have to make your own carrot juice, and carrot juice is delicious in a cocktail.
Mm. So tell us some of the female bartenders or mixologists who are in here.
Well, Laura Newman is a favorite. She was a bartender in Brooklyn, and she's recently moved to Birmingham and is opening a bar there. And she is just so creative and cool. There's just so many. I was really hoping, actually, and with my second book, I had a secret agenda to have as many women as possible. And it's always the juggling act of getting the ingredients you need and balancing it all out. Another favorite is Julia Momose, who's in the process of opening a new bar in Chicago. And she has some really cool drinks. One of them uses silken tofu for the rich texture. And she has a scotch drink as well that's really, really cool. That has miso in it.
Ooh. We'll have to share some of these pictures on our Instagram account.
Yeah.
These sound amazing.
Yeah. And Caitlin Lamon also has a drink in there. And I met her when she was at Trick Dog, which was right near my house in San Francisco. And she's in Chicago now and has started a new cocktail conference called Chicago Style that is really awesome, sort of talking about these issues, Me Too, and other issues related to women in the bar
scene. Let's talk about that for a minute, because I mentioned earlier the 86 This project we did on our website, and we put an open call out for women to submit essays, stories, artwork, whatever they wanted to submit, and there was a lot about bartending and just how harassed female bartenders and mixologists can be.
Sure.
That was pretty depressing.
And I think in any environment where there's alcohol... there's some danger in that, and people just in the service industry overall, I think people don't treat each other well.
Well, you know, it wasn't just the staff. It wasn't just staff harassing staff. It was an equal amount of guests and customers doing the harassing.
And I think there's been a lot of discussion in the bar community about how do we keep each other safe? How do we keep our customers safe? What are code words that a customer can say? Call my friend or whatever.
Talk about that, because I didn't even know that was a thing until someone wrote a piece about Angela's, a shot for Angela. I mean, there are all these different things.
There's different, you know, bartenders can, I don't know whether they post them in the women's bathroom or what, but that a sort of code word set up for like, get rid of this guy. And that could be a good system.
But then that begs the question, is that fair to the bartender or the mixologist to all of a sudden have to be security personnel?
I mean, I think bartenders have always been hopeful that it wasn't just about the drinks. And I think more and more you can get great drinks everywhere. And the question is, where can you get a really great experience? And that's part of what the next step of the cocktail scene is.
It's funny, I say that about food a lot, that pretty much today you can get great food all over the place. And just because there are so many talented people now, ingredients are better than they ever were. More people have access to good produce. So the same thing is going on in the mixology world, huh?
Mm-hmm. And I think it's, you know, I think as you were saying about restaurants getting funding, I think the more we see women running the show, the better off it is. And things like Speed Rack, I don't know if you know, Ivy yes. Mix and Lynette Marrero's competition have done a really good job of raising the profile of women in the bar and helping these people, you know, get promoted to running the program or open their own place. And there's just, it shows you how many talented women are in this industry. And that's such a great thing.
Yeah, Speed Rack's incredible. They raise money. It's a speed competition, right, for female bartenders, and it raises money for breast cancer research and awareness and all of that. And thank you for the reminder. Ivy's never been on the show, but she has a restaurant right up the block from mm-hmm. Cherry Bomb headquarters. And we need to get her.
Oh, yeah.
We need to book her. She's in Brooklyn. It's crazy that she hasn't been on the show yet, but she's fantastic. Any other places you want to give a shout out to that you just love around the country? I know I'm putting you on the spot. I didn't ask you to do homework in advance.
I didn't do any homework. You know, I've been really lucky to connect with bartenders all around the country, and I think it is that thing where there's great drinks in lots of places. Every city has somewhere cool, and so I like to draw outside of New York City as well. But I'm really excited. I'm hoping to go this week to Aaron Reese's new place, which is in Freeman's. I think it's called Bonza Bar, and it's themed about something like the Arctic exploration or something, and they're doing a whole tasting menu of cocktails, and she's this incredibly talented bartender, so that's pretty exciting.
It's at Freeman's Restaurant?
Mm-hmm. It's inside, upstairs.
Okay.
And it's just open. I think it's weekends only for now, but it's going to go full-time.
Oh, good tip.
It looks very cool.
Great. We'll have to check that out. Also, before the show, you and I were talking about The Riddler, which is Jen Pelka's champagne bar. I don't know if they have cocktails there, but they definitely have champagne. But she has such an interesting funding mechanism in place. She raised money from, I think, 37 different female investors to open her restaurant. And I love seeing these different sort of creative takes on raising money.
Yeah. And you just want to be in that club. That sounds like a cool club.
It does, right? It does sound like a cool
club. And I think San Francisco has a lot of cool things going on with women gathering together now. I just joined a co-working space that was founded by Rachel Kong, who's the
Ruby, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm. She's the former managing editor of Lucky Peach, and it is the best thing. It's a place where women are gathering to work, but also there's readings, and we're going to have a party to celebrate the book, and it's so amazing to talk to women who are academics and women who run restaurants and women who are photographers. And I have a friend who is bringing in this amazing turmeric. It's called Diaspora Co., and that stuff is delicious. And it's wonderful in a city that sometimes feels like bro central, that there are a number of different places where women are gathering to support each other's work and to meet each other as professionals. It's easy to meet moms on the playground, but it feels really good to meet other writers and artists and creatives.
I'm happy to hear that's going on. Well, Maggie, that's all the time we have for today. I love your book. It's a treasure for people who just like to drink, but don't, you know, their bartending skills aren't maybe what they should or could be. So everybody needs to check out The One Bottle Cocktail by Maggie Hoffman. It's out on March 6th, and we really appreciate you stopping by.
Thanks so much for having me.
We're going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsor, Emmy Cheeses from Switzerland. It's time for a quick cheese lesson from our friends at Emmy, the makers of traditional, delicious cheeses from Switzerland. Do you know about Emmentaler? Of course you do. This is the original Swiss cheese, world famous for its distinctive holes and extraordinary flavor. Emmy's special Kaltbach Emmentaler AOP is cave-aged in Emmy's 22-million-year-old natural sandstone cave to produce an earthy, intense nuttiness and herbaceous wittiness. Whether you're snacking or party planning, serve your Emmentaler with dried apricots, rosemary sprigs, caramelized onions, or bacon, and pair it with black tea or an oaked Chardonnay, a Cabernet Sauvignon, or gin and tonic. Look for the red and blue Emmy logo at your favorite local grocer. Hey, Bomb Squad. Visit the Cherry Bomb online shop for all things Bomb Squad. We've got signed copies of the Cherry Bomb Cookbook, which features more than 100 recipes from 100 of the coolest women in food. Need a great gift? How about a gift subscription to Cherry Bomb Magazine? And we've got those collabs, like our Headley and Bennett apron. Visit cherrybomb.com for more. We're here with our second guest, Caroline Schiff. She has one of my favorite Instagram accounts. It's filled with beautiful cakes, cookies, and ice creams that she creates as executive pastry chef of the Green Grape here in Brooklyn. She is self-taught. She grew up in and around New York City, and she was recently on Beat Bobby Flay. Spoiler alert, she did not beat Bobby, and she would like a rematch. Caroline also has the best hair in the food world. She is probably tired of hearing about that, but I'm going to say it anyway. Caroline Schiff, welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm really excited. This is your first appearance on Heritage Radio Network and your first time on Radio Cherry Bomb.
It is. I'm really happy to be here.
I'm so excited. And you brought us gifts.
I did. Yes, I brought you some cookies. And this is kind of a new recipe that I recently made. They are salted cashew, brown butter, and white chocolate.
Oh, wait, did someone tell you I like white chocolate?
No,
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
I love white chocolate. Amy
That's
Guittard.
That's like my sixth sense. I love her chocolate.
I love Amy Guittard. She is the part of the famous Guittard chocolate family.
She's amazing. I met her actually last year at the Jubilee. And I think she's the bomb.
She is the bomb. She teases me about my fondness for white chocolate, which some real chocolate people don't think is actually chocolate.
Yeah, there's a lot of sort of white chocolate bashing out there, but I think that I'm a lover of all the chocolates. And the thing I love about white chocolate is that it has this beautiful butteriness to it. And obviously it's really sweet, but then it creates a beautiful canvas for some other stuff. And it works really well with savory, stronger flavors like sea salt.
Wow, so, you sound like a pastry chef.
I hope so.
So you're self-taught.
I'm self-taught, but I also think that it's really important to also let people know that I worked a lot among so many other great chefs, and so that's really where I learned everything, is just by, you know, apprenticing and kind of having an opportunity to work alongside so many people.
Did you bake a lot as a kid?
That was like all I did. That was I was not interested in any other toys really or anything like that. I just like always wanted to bake, and I would come home from school and make cookies. My birthday was my favorite day of the year, not because it was my birthday, but because I knew I got to make a birthday cake.
You made your own birthday cake.
Oh my God, yeah. And I thought it was so weird that people would go out and buy birthday cakes. I'm like, what do you mean you didn't make your birthday cake? Like, what, did you not have time? What happened?
Did you have one of those easy bake ovens, or did you go straight
to the
real deal?
I went straight to the real deal, and I was, my mother is amazing and was so nurturing, and she was like, all right, you know, if you want to, I'm like, I'm right here, I'm watching you, so really, really supportive. But yeah, I mean, I went to it so naturally. It made me really happy. I had a really insatiable sweet tooth. And it was always something that really brought me great sense of joy and happiness. So I'm very lucky to do it professionally.
So how did you wind up at the Green Grape?
It's funny. I kind of I've actually come sort of full circle there. When I graduated college and I got an academic degree, and I wanted to work in kitchens. So sort of the kind of long story short was that I got an internship in a kitchen in Brooklyn at the Good Fork, which is still there. It's in Red Hook. It's owned by Sohee Kim and Ben Schneider. They're a couple, and she is an incredible chef to this day. She's my greatest mentor and a really wonderful friend.
I love her restaurant. The steak with kimchi, fried rice.
I mean, she taught me how to make dumplings. She taught me how to make pasta. Like this, you know, she was just an incredible mentor. And she has another restaurant now called Insa as well.
That has karaoke bar in the back.
Yes. I don't do karaoke. Singing is not one of my talents. But I was interning there, and she was teaching me all this stuff. And then I also needed a job. And I had the privilege of doing all of my education in Europe. And I lived in Britain and I lived in France. And second to pastry, my greatest love is cheese. So I knew a lot about cheese. And there's this great market, Green Grape Provisions, around the corner from my house. And I just went in there one day and I was like, I'm looking for a job, I'm cooking and I'm learning, and but I know a ton about cheese. So, you know, can I work at your cheese counter? And they were like, sure, great, you know. And
so wait, that's hilarious, because right in front of us, we have our cheese plate.
Yes.
With our Emmentaler cheese from Emmy.
Which
and
is...
just FYI, that's my lunch. So I can only give you half of it.
I think that cheese is a perfectly acceptable meal. You can ask anybody in my life, like, what does Caroline have for dinner? What is her diet? Well, it's cookies, and then it's, you know, some healthy stuff here and there, and then it's wine and cheese.
You sort of have my dream life. Wine, cheese, baked goods, buttercream frosting.
Yeah, and I figured out the secret. All you have to do is just constantly be training for a marathon, and then you can eat whatever you want.
Right, which you do, and I have seen you.
Which I do.
In your runner's gear, garb, whatever you call it.
Yeah, when I'm not baking and doing all of that, I am. You can see me running all over Brooklyn. So.
So back to how you got the job. You talked your way into the cheese counter gig.
Yeah. And, you know, and I worked there for a little while and it was great. It's a wonderful company to work at. It's run and owned by some really amazing women. And then I ended up...
I didn't know that about Green Grape.
Yeah,
and it's in Fort Greene?
Yeah, it's in Fort Greene. It's on Fulton Street. There's an all-day cafe that I make all the pastries for. With my team.
And that's called the
and
Annex?
And the Annex. It's a great place to just kind of park yourself for the day, set yourself up with your computer, you know, do your work, eat some good pastries along the way, great coffee. So I worked with them for a little while, and then I got a little more time at the restaurant. I got a full-time position there, and so I stepped away from the Green Grape. And, you know, I subsequently went, you know, to another restaurant, and then looking for a change of pace from that whole world of, you know, late nights and stuff, it kind of just sort of came full circle. They were looking to, you know, do some, grow their pastry program a little bit, and I was looking for something new, and so... I've always stayed in touch. I live right in the neighborhood, so it's where I shop and it's where I eat. It's where I get my coffee anyway. And I just kind of came back to the family.
And tell us about the seasonal ice cream shop, Scoops and Sweets.
So Scoops and Sweets, we have our, that's where we do all of our baking out of. And so we have our bakery in the back. And then in the summer months, it's open and we serve, it's the only thing we don't make in-house. We serve beautiful, organic, made in Brooklyn blue marble ice cream. They are the best company to work with. They're so awesome. They've been amazing partners. And so, you know, we open in the spring, usually like in April, and then we stay open through around Halloween, usually like when it starts to get cold out. And we do awesome ice cream sundaes. We've got great soft serve, and we do a ton of catering out of there, birthday cakes, that kind of thing. So it's just a really fun neighborhood place. It kind of is just like there'll be a line out the door on like a Saturday and Sunday in the summer. It's just awesome.
So let's talk about your amazing Instagram account, which I have to look at every single day.
Yeah.
Where if you see a cake, like you just did that matcha chocolate cake mm-hmm. the other day, if you see something incredible on your Instagram, where can you go to get that?
The best way to get that is to go online, greengrape.com, and it's green with an extra E at the end for the neighborhood Fort Greene. And you can just place all your orders online there. If you click the catering tab, and then go down to desserts, you'll see a whole cake menu, and there's pies, there's tarts, there's cookie platters, everything. And then if you want, you know, a custom cake, you have something special in mind that you don't see, if you just shoot us an email, catering@greengrape.com, we can usually make it happen for you.
Wow. What is your favorite thing to make these days?
It's a hard question because I love all of my my children equally. but I'm really having a love affair lately with birthday cakes. It's really, and I think that just sort of, again, like it go, it's like a full circle thing for me of like, what was my favorite thing to make as a kid? It was always like, my birthday cake, what am I going to make this year? So I'm really in love with that and really think that there's just something so satisfying and rewarding about putting together this beautiful, celebratory, delicious thing for someone or for yourself or for a loved one. It's just, it feels like such a full project.
Okay, let's talk about your hair. Sorry to do that to you, but you know, I used to be a beauty editor. I used to be a beauty editor. I can't help but get excited when I see people have hair like yours.
Thank you.
And we'll definitely put pictures of Caroline on our Instagram and on our show page. But for those of you who are listening and not looking, I don't even know how to describe it. It's like Kate Bush, if you're a Kate Bush fan. I don't know if you are. But yeah. Like, it's Kate Bush meets Little House on the Prairie meets, like, I don't know, Anna of Green Gables or something.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like that's a great way to describe it. Thank you so much. My hair is, it's definitely unique. It's big and it's, you know, red-ish and kind of got some other tones going on in there, but it's like, it's totally natural. I mean, maybe, you know, one day I'll post a picture of my mom and I side by side because she's got the same thing. And yeah, it's a whole, I think it's just become part of my personal brand.
Is that weird?
No. I mean, I love it. It kind of happened very organically. I wasn't even like really thinking about it.
Trying to be famous for that?
My hair was trying to be famous, not me. It has its own agent, its own representation, everything. No, but it's just really become part of my personal brand, I think, and it's fun, and it's a fun thing to be recognized for, and I'm very lucky to have it.
So you've got the top, you like fasten the top in this kind of like, what do you call it, a pompadour kind of thing?
Or like a, maybe like a bouffant?
Oh, right,
bouffant. I don't know. I have a few different, it's got a few different looks. I just buy like those, you know, those like claw clips. I just buy them at like CVS for whatever, $4. And I use it until my hair snaps it in two, which usually is like a few weeks. And I kind of wear it like half up, half down.
What do you do about the health department when you're working?
We have, I have headscarves and hairnets.
A sexy hairnet. That's always fun.
And yeah, exactly. But, you know, you can't really see them from far away.
Yeah. So I'm sure our baking enthusiasts out there are like, okay, enough with the hair. We want some baking secrets. So give us a tip or trick about baking at home.
Oh, that's a good.
What's some good equipment to have on hand, or just a fun thing to make that you wouldn't think of making? Have you made those cookies you bang the pan against the...
That's a great technique, and that's something we totally do. And it just kind of like takes the air out of them real quick. And
about that, because that scares me. I would make a disaster of a mess.
You just got to be kind of gentle with it. You don't want to like really slap it. Your cookies are done, and you just, you know, if you're using an oven at home, you just like pull them out of the oven and very lightly just, you're holding the sheet tray with two hands, hopefully, and just like kind of lightly tap it on the side of your counter. And that will just kind of spread the cookies out a little bit, take the air out a little bit. They'll get nice and crispy around the edges, but they'll stay kind of chewy in the center.
So wait, you do this before you put them in or when you take them out?
Right when you take them out. Like, they're done baking.
Oh, okay.
And you just take them out and just give it a little tap.
Huh.
Yeah. So that's something we do. Another thing that it's so obvious, but also in a way not at all. I've been doing a lot with brown butter lately, and basically, for most recipes, anything where that calls for butter, you can brown the butter first and then resolidify it just by throwing it in the fridge, or if it's a cool day, let it sit at room temperature, and it adds this whole other complexity to whatever you're making. So these cookies, for instance, brown butter. If you're making buttercream, use brown butter. Pound cake, use brown butter. Sometimes you might need to adjust the other fats in the recipe a little bit, add a little more moisture here and there, because when you've browned the butter, what you've done is you've, there's been a ton of evaporation, you've removed a ton of moisture, but you've also, you've caramelized it. You know, you've kind of, you've burnt it, essentially. And in French, it's called beurre noisette. So it's this nutty butter. Noisette means nut, hazelnut in French. I knew my French degree would come in handy at some point. So it adds this incredibly complex flavor to whatever you're doing. And I think it's sort of a no-brainer. Like, I have a scone, and I just do half regular butter, half brown butter. And it's out of this world.
Yum. I love that.
Yeah. I'll bring you one next time.
Well, I'm thrilled you brought me those cookies. I'm going to eat all of them. So thank you for stopping by.
Thank you so much.
And you came here on short notice, which I really appreciate.
Absolutely. Well, I'm nearby.
If you want to see Caroline Schiff in action, be sure to go visit the Green Grape or the Green Grape Annex, mm-hmm. and you can try some of her amazing baked goods and see what the little Green Grape community is all about. And be sure to follow her on Instagram at Pastry Schiff.
Yes. It's a play on Pastry Chef. Get it?
I did. Now I do. I didn't get it. Okay.
Yeah.
I don't know. I should have gotten it, but I did not. All right. Thanks
Thank
for coming by.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's it for today's show. Thank you to our sponsor, Emmy, the maker of delicious traditional cheeses from Switzerland, including the Kaltbach cave-aged Emmentaler, Gruyere, and Le Cremeux. Thank you to our engineer, Dave Tadashore, and to the band Tra La La for our theme song. Radio Cherry Bomb is a joint production of Heritage Radio Network and Cherry Bomb Magazine. We record our podcast each week in a shipping container in the back of Roberta's Pizzeria in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I kid you not. We'd love it if you could leave a review of Radio Cherry Bomb on your favorite podcast platform, including Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, and now Spotify. Let us know who you'd like to hear on a future episode. Thanks for listening, everybody. You're the bomb.
I'll have what she's having.
Radio Cherry Bomb is powered by Simplecast. Simplecast is a popular hosting and analytics platform that allows podcasters to easily host and publish to apps like Apple Podcasts. If you have a podcast or are looking to create your very first, check it out. Try it for free and save half off your first 3 months at simplecast.com/heritage.